Blog Talk Radio.
Command Central, this is the Wolf's Den, recording. Are you receiving us? Command Central, come in. Over.
Wolf's Den, this is Command Central. I repeat, Wolf's Den, this is Command Central. We are receiving you. Begin.
Ah yes, the children of the night, which can only mean that it's time for Live Inside the Wolf's Den, a podcast that has started a petition to get Stan Lee's head put up with Mount Rushmore with other great presidents. Tonight we have with us Nate Abell. Nate is joining us with the project that he's working on called Isthmus, and we promise you that by the time we're done with this interview, you are going to be as excited about this as we are. We're also going to cover, like we normally do in our episodes, we're going to talk a little bit about hobby. We're going to cover swatting and what, and it must stop. We must sort of gather together as geeks and realize how much damage we can do with this kind of stuff. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk about the survey results from last show, news from Games Workshop and Privateer Press. We haven't done enough mini stuff in a little while. We got a little butt kicking about that, so I want to cover that. We're going to look at some D&D review stuff, talk about Dramation coming up, and give you a review of the movie Jupiter Ascending. If you haven't seen a review on it, we're going to have one for you here. So before we get into the show, as we like to always do, we like to get you caught up with us, the hosts here. So let me talk first with the J-Man. How you been, brother, and what's been going on in hobby?
Hey, man, how's it going? Well, I finally got my butt playing Dragon Age Inquisition on PlayStation 3, and I have to say all the dirty rumors about the graphics are true. After having a look at your PlayStation 4 version versus my PlayStation 3, the story itself is great. The gameplay is great. I'm not super far into the game yet, but I'm liking the story quite a bit and the controls. Those are all pretty good. But the graphics are very choppy for the PlayStation 3. There's long waiting periods as it's saving, and I think what we're really coming up against is what might be the beginning of the end of new games for PlayStation 3 as they just get too powerful for the old processor. So that's what I've been messing around with.
Okay. You know, Borderlands really had a big fight about this when they decided to put out their prequel. They came ahead and they went to PlayStation, and Sony said, we'd like you to produce it for the 4. And their answer was, we have more copies of Borderlands 2 sold than you have PlayStation 4s made. So why would we go ahead and write for something that you're not even going to be able to support? If every one of our buyers goes out and buys for the 4, I mean, we have more games outsold than you have units. It just doesn't make sense. So Borderlands actually was one of those companies that fought back and said, no, we're not going to lose the 3. We have fans on the 3. We have people that still run the 3. And that's the way it's going to be from now on until we decide that it's just, you know, the machine is truly dead. However, like you said, conversely, these high-end graphics games, these large RPG-style games that are coming out are being written on both systems, and you're starting to see a drop-off in the 3. I mean, what is the 3 now? Like 9, 10, it's got to be 10 years old, right? PlayStation 3?
I think so.
It's out.
It's been 10 years,
Yeah, so, I mean, the processor's old. I mean, you know, it was there for its time, but, you know, Dragon Age Inquisition pushes that the machine a good amount, and on the 4 it is gorgeous. I finished it already. I've started another character. I want to play it as a mage. Finished it as sort of a fighter class. I'm now working on it as a mage and very excited to play it through again. 70 hours snapped by. So if you haven't had a chance to get it yet, definitely go into it. It's a great game. Pick it up used if you can, however you want to do it, but Dragon Age Inquisition, if you like the first one, Origins and Awakenings, you'll love this one. All right, so any other games or anything going on with you? Any board games you played over the last 2 weeks? Or I know our group is coming up this weekend, and we're looking for a little Wings of Glory action. That should be fun.
Yeah, I love Wings of Glory. I'm really excited about that. I mean, and I'm not sure really what you have in mind. I mean, obviously when we think Wings of Glory, I'm a history fanatic, so the first thing I think of is getting my good old Germans back in the sky. That got me a little excited, but You know, my gaming days on boards and stuff tend to be with your group mostly because of my schedule.
Right. Okay. All right, great. I believe Mr. Sunshine is out there as well. Mr. Sunshine, how are you tonight?
Hopefully I'm doing much better now.
There you go. All right, and what about you? What's new in hobby for you lately?
Hobby. Well, not so much hobby, but I've been watching and rewatching the 5 original Planet of the Apes movies. And just spending some time board gaming with the family and some friends.
Okay, cool. That's good. You did learn Machi Koro. We tried that. Did you end up thinking that was an investment worth your time? How would you rate Machi Koro on a 1 to 5?
I think it's a 4, 4.5. It's a great gateway game.
Okay.
Easy to play. You know, the mechanic is very, very quick to pick up. Even the younger players will be able to pick it up fairly quickly. And it's a great gateway game. Get people started into some board gaming.
So Craig, are you basically saying that as a gateway game, this could lead to you playing more games in darkened alleys and behind buildings? Is that what you're telling us?
More hardcore gaming. Absolutely.
Somebody throw the dice, damn you! Throw the dice.
That's right. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes.
Daddy needs zombies.
Yeah, but instead of shoes, it'd be like Daddy needs two wool and some wood. Yeah, talking a little Settlers of Catan action. But yeah, it is a great gateway game, and we blew through it in like 20-25 minutes. Two player though, it's a little crippled. I don't like it with two players. We kind of did a review on it a few weeks ago, and if you have a chance to play it, do it with three or more. You know, three or four, because with two, you really don't get the full effect of most of the cards because it just goes so fast. So that's good for you. For me, in hobby, we ran our D&D group the other night. That we got ourselves back on track with that. That was fun. Been playing a lot of – did the Firefly again board game. Had a great time with that. Really enjoyed that opening scenario. We're going to actually introduce that to our board game group because we do a lot of stuff. But most television show games I'm real leery of, like we talked about. But, again, this one really, really good. So I've been playing a little Firefly, and that's pretty much – I'm working on a project that I'm going to be submitting hopefully to Dynamite Comics here in a couple months, maybe even not months, weeks, hopefully. So we'll keep you informed with that as things go on, and if we get any good news from then, we'll be sure to pass it on to the flock at the den. Okay, so because we like to give people a chance to come on and talk to you, our listeners, about new and exciting projects that they're working on, and this one is definitely one of them that we are super psyched about, I would like to take no extra time. We just jump right into it and introduce our very special guest for the evening, Nate Abell. Nate, welcome to the Wolf's Den.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's great being here.
Not a problem. First of all, I have to tell you that I was really, and I sort of mentioned this off air just real quick, I was totally blown away by the project the instant I started watching it. But before we get into all that and I steal the thunder and kind of, you know, shake the tree a little bit and drop all the secrets, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I grew up in Wisconsin. I went to Parkside, UW Parkside, which is where the first or second, I think, Gen Cons were hosted when they weren't in Geneva, Lake Geneva in Wisconsin. So that was pretty cool going there. I graduated from school, moved to Austin, Texas, went to art grad school, and got married, had a baby, and now my wife and I and my little one-year-old, we cruise around the United States in a little RV while I freelance for the games industry and work on Isthmus. So basically my whole life right there.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Cruise around in an RV?
Yeah, we've got a little travel trailer.
That's almost gypsy-like of you.
Yeah, it's very gypsy-like. We have the smallest trailer, usually, whatever park we're at, but we're into that.
That's okay, man. I love it. That's, you know what? That's actually somebody who talks the talk and walks the walk, because you know, I hate to say it like that, but if you're gonna bleed for the art and you're gonna do it, you know, then you got to do it. You got to jump in with both feet because the doors don't open too many times, but when they do, you'll be there, brother. That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
One of the other questions that we like to ask our the people that come on our show, and again, you said off air you weren't too offended by the word geek, so we're gonna throw it right at you. Sort of what we always ask people what their geek pedigree is, and it's not to get, you know, who's better than what or who did, but more to find out where you came from through the ranks. Were you an RPGer? Did you come up through video gaming? Sort of what's your background in?
Boy, I dabble in everything. I think I'm a nerd of all trades, master of none. I always lose the arguments with the real nerds that are like specialists in their given, you know, field. Yeah, specialist nerds. And I kind of, I'm nerdy enough that I'm not a normal person, but I'm totally a geek, so I kind of don't fit in either realm. My baptism was Star Wars. My dad sat me down real young, and we had a bucket of fried chicken, and we watched Star Wars. And it wasn't like, this is a movie. It was like, okay, welcome now. Welcome to this world that it will be your world and our world and the nerd world. And from there, it's gotten worse and worse. Magic, PC gaming, way back, like Tribes 1, Tribes 2, Command & Conquer, the original. I played Call of Duty 1, like, before their Call of Duty was, like, every bro's thing. So, yeah. And then I've run pen and paper games and played pen and paper, Vampire. I've never LARPed, but that's on my bucket list. So, I'm fully fledged, I think. But, yeah.
No,
that's my nerd genes there.
Sounds like you've run the, like you said, you've run the gambit. You're very much like me. Some, like you said, some geeks have that, you know, they stick to one or two things that they're really, really good at, or they know and they're knowledgeable of, like LARPers, you know, sometimes it's just because it's such a consuming hobby that's pretty much where they stay in that, you know, in that verse. But, no, I mini paint, I run, did Vampire, did the D&D thing. Board games, the whole bit. It's enough that, you know, you've dabbled in it all. And like you said, you know, master of none, but you're at least you can hold your own in most of them, which is pretty cool. While doing the research for this interview, Nate, I came upon some of the stuff. I guess I would call them stills or, you know, paintings or pictures that you've done. And I thought they were just awesome. And they were at, I guess, nateabell.com, if I'm getting that right. And, I particularly loved Ghost Castle. How long have you been putting your work out there on the net, first of all? And for the listeners of the Wolf's Den, guys, I saw this one Ghost Castle I had on Tools Parabola, and I was just sitting there listening to Parabola come on, and it was, you know, that Tool ambiance. Looking at this picture, it had to be 9 minutes. You know, I let both Parabola and Parable run, and it was just like, oh my God. And I said, I got to make notes of this and ask Nate. So how long have you actually been putting your work out on the internet at nateabell.com?
I'd say 2006-ish. I was a sophomore in college, and I discovered DeviantArt, which had been out for a couple of years at that point, DeviantArt.com and ConceptArt.org. And I'd always been searching for an outlet for art, and I'd always done art, but I didn't know that you could get a job in games doing concept art for games. That process never really made sense to me until I went onto those websites and saw what people were doing. And if you dig through the concept art forums, you can probably find really horrible paintings that I did like 6 months into digital painting. But everybody's got those. Whether you can find them or not is up to you. But yeah, that's so 2006 is when I would start posting work, I'd say.
Okay. And pieces like that. Now on DeviantArt, I don't surf it. My oldest daughter surfs it a lot. Is stuff up there for sale? Do you do prints of some of your old work? Do you have that kind of stuff available for people if they're interested?
No, I don't. I run a lot of the work that I do now. Ghost Castle is actually a really old piece. I did that one probably 2009 or 10. It's the oldest piece on my website by far. But that blog and that website is primarily to get freelance work from the games industry. There hasn't been enough demand yet to do prints, but if people started emailing me and asking about it or, you know, something like that, I would totally be down. And I know DeviantArt runs that, but I'd probably do it in-house and mail it to people direct so they could get signatures, and you could do little drawings with it, make it a little bit more personal. But I'm not on DeviantArt anymore. That community is much different than it was when I started on there years and years and years ago. It's
right.
completely different, but that's okay. You know, these things evolve.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you're done listening, don't change off now. Don't switch off while we're in the middle of it. NateAbell.com, you can see some of the other work. And if you're someone who works in the industry and you need somebody for concept art, there you go. Because the stuff, I'll tell you, all of it's very, very good. It's really talented.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
At what age, no problem, at what age did you sort of become aware of the fact that you could, it wasn't that you were just going to sketch, or it wasn't just that you could sit there and draw characters on paper for people that begged you to do it, but you actually realized, I'm an artist. I mean, does it happen? Do you sit there one day, look at something, and finally go, yeah, shit, I can do this? Because I tried with that little Skippy with the turtle, and I couldn't even get him when I sketched him. I traced that sumbitch, and I couldn't get it right. So is there some point as an artist that you just look at something, or somebody says, dude, you got it, and you finally believe it and it clicks? Well, did that happen for you?
I think you make that decision and then you realize what a crazy decision that is, and then you regret it and make that decision over and over again throughout your entire life as an artist. I know very few artists who are confident that they are artists. It's kind of like, oh, wow, I'm doing art, and all of a sudden 20 years went by and I'm still not sure if I'm good at it yet, kind of a thing. Because you're always looking to the next hill, and you're always looking. It's a very difficult relationship. It's not like, hey, I'm a basketball player. I was a basketball player for 5 years. I worked for the Celtics, or I played at the Celtics. I'm a basketball player. You can't do that. I mean, if you go and work at World of Warcraft for 4 or 5 years, you can kind of say that, but that's not the relationship I have with my art. But, yeah, I think it would have been 10 or 12. I sat back, and I realized that this is what I wanted to do. It was just so much fun. And the ability to create things that don't exist. I think that's such a beautiful process. And Star Wars is a fantastical world. Magic the Gathering is a magical world. It's different. It's not reality. And there's nothing wrong with reality, but to think beyond that or in between that is just, that never gets old for me, just exploring that.
That's amazing. And I think you're right. The J-Man is an artist as well. And craft kind of life sometimes overtakes craft, and I'm a writer and he writes as well, and we do other things, but you know, every day you sit there and you know, I've self-published a book. Okay, it sells 8,000 copies. That's great, you know, by standards that's good, but you keep going, yeah, but it didn't make 8,500. It didn't make, you know, when do I, and it's, I'm not even sure it's so much the fan appreciation of it, but I think you start thinking to yourself, I could have changed that. I could have done this, or that this could have been reworked and I wouldn't have made that much of a difference. And you're right. I think that there's a restless soul to an art, to people that are in the, you know, that creative process. And you just, you sit back and you kind of, you know, you're happy for a minute, and then it's almost like, you know, oh my God, what have I, you know, I got to move on to that next project. So, yeah. You know, I kind of can sympathize with that feeling. But let me tell you, as a person who cannot draw, you're there, brother. You can draw. You're there.
Yeah, thank you. Awesome.
You said that you attended art school. Go into a little bit of that. Was it graphic art? Were you doing more serious stuff? Did you come in? I mean, how did that all come about? And I think you had even mentioned where you were attending. Where did you actually go to school again?
Well, I got a 4-year degree undergrad from UW Parkside, which is a state school in Wisconsin.
Okay.
I was basically looking at the price tags on schools, and I said, what's the cheapest art school that I can go to that'll give me a 4-year degree so that my mom will leave me alone finally about getting a 4-year degree? she went and she works at a tech school now, so tech schools are cool now that she worked at one and sees that they're awesome, but she didn't work there when I needed a 4-year degree. So anyway, I went there and got a really traditional college experience, but it did not prepare me for the art world at all. I moved from there to Austin, Texas, and tried to get into the games industry a little bit. Didn't really work out. I didn't have a skill set that people respected, and I couldn't respect. So I ended up managing a full-ride scholarship to a school called the Art Department. It actually doesn't exist anymore. The owners folded it, but... that was right at the beginning of online art education, and it was a great school. Fantastic. Definitely prepared me for the industry, and that's why I'm sitting in front of you, or on the phone with you right now, I guess, is because of that school. But yeah, it's kind of an illusion of art school. You can sit there and they teach you about what you need to do, but then you have to spend 100 hours or 1,000 hours taking that little sentence that they say, like, hey, this is rendering or this is color, and you understand it like a textbook, but you don't know it like you can reproduce it. And I mean, it's the same for writing. It's like, well, here's a verb and here's a noun and that's it. And it's like, well, of course I can write, but then there's so much more to that and a bottomless pit of details in there that you have to spend. So yeah, I spent a lot of time as all artists do and all creatives do, polishing my craft in the dark hours of the middle of the night. But the art schools certainly were helpful to get me started on that path.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Okay, so we've talked about the how and sort of got you to the point where you've now gotten out of school. You've done some stills. You're looking at working in the games industry. You get through all that, and all of a sudden, Isthmus. So, where is it from, and how did it all get started?
I was at TAD, and they have a lot of instructors there. They had instructors that had been in the industry, the games industry, and the tone of voice and the games industry, the video games industry, is a very hard industry to be in. It's very taxing, and you want to be there, so they pay you less, most cases, and they work you really hard. It's a really hard industry to live in. And so these people were teaching instead of being in industry, but all they talked about was how hard the industry was. And this golden promise on the other side of this industry or around this industry was owning your own product, owning your own project, you know, doing the Mike Mignola thing and doing Hellboy or, you know, Star Wars or whatever, or Dan Levisi, The Last Man Standing. These are people who own this art project that they love and they get to pour all this time into, and then they get enough money to survive on that project. So you're not working for Nintendo, you know, doing Donkey Kong, and some guy gets a check who owns, you know, Nintendo, Mr. Nintendo, for all the hard work that you did. You do have the job security and all that, but I wanted to be that person. I wanted to be the guy that got the check at the end of the day, even if it was a very, very, very small check, doing what I wanted to do. And you get the artistic freedom. And I mean, I live in an RV, so I'm totally willing to sacrifice to make what I'm doing work, you know. But while I was at school, that was getting drilled into my head. You've got to have your own project. So I started, I did one sketch, actually. It was actually a written sketch of a scene where a character botches a bounty hunting collection. And that scene stuck in my head really, really good. And I began painting and drawing and writing as I always do, but instead of all these little independent things that were off on their own, I was realizing that it was all pieces of a greater whole. That I was, the more I uncovered, the more I realized that this is one thing. And it was all my inspirations and all the things that I loved about certain movies and moments and scenes and writing and illustrations and moments that I've had in my real life. And I realized it was Isthmus. This was this big project, this big world that I wanted to fill out with people and characters and creatures and vehicles and all this stuff. And that was probably junior year of my TAD experience, which would have been maybe 4 years ago now. So yeah, that was when the project really took hold, and it became something that I knew I needed to do.
Okay. When you sort of put it together in your head, though, I hear you started it kind of from a sketch, and then all these other elements that you started to think about, you began realizing would fit in or were Isthmus calling out to you, like projects sometimes do to artists. You know, they claim that when you sculpt the stone, it's already there. You just have to find it. You know, there's always this calling. But when you looked at Isthmus originally, would you think about maybe doing it in a more traditional medium like a comic book? Or was it always something that you wanted to say, I want to give it more life than that. I want to have more into it, more, you know, I want the music. I want the voiceover. How did you see it when you first started it?
It was always a film in my mind at first. I see, even when I'm doing illustrations for clients, in the games industry, I see film moments and I try to pick the most interesting frame from that shot and put that on the page or put that on the screen. And I there was no way I was going to make a film of this. It's a fantastical world. It's, the cliffs are huge. With 3D modeling and green screen, maybe I could have pulled something off, but not with a shoestring budget and with so little experience and no exposure in the industry that I had 4 years ago. So I realized I had to make something that wasn't quite film and wasn't quite, it was illustration, because I knew enough about illustration to do it. So I had to kind of stitch together this product. And that was another thing that Tad gave me, was the idea of, you can have a really great idea, but you have to make it kind of make sense on paper a little bit too. It has, there has to be a business around it. You know, you can make illustrations and sell the prints. You know, you can make that work, but you can't like build granite structures, you know, in your backyard and then ship them to people. It just doesn't make sense. You, it would be so expensive to ship something like that. So thinking about it like that was very helpful. And I remember I was digging through the internet at one point, looking up storyboards, because storyboards tied to film, which is a huge inspiration and a huge part of how I visualized this project. And I came across Ashley Wood. He's an Australian painter. He did a Metal Gear Solid motion comic for the PSP. This is probably when the PSP was out, so I don't even know how long ago. But it was beautiful. It was very impasto style, very quick, and it was very, like a motion storyboard where there's a flat character that's moving with really, really great sound and really, really great voice acting. And I saw it and went, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make it just like that, except more film. And that was before Made Fire, which is the you know, comic book, motion comic kind of like industry. Had really put itself together. It was just starting out when I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. And I never really got into comic books. I think I read Batman, the one that everybody read, that everybody that likes Batman doesn't like. Help me out here. Which one is that? I read that. Yeah,
right.
It's the one where he's older. Anyway.
Dark Demon Knight.
Yes.
Right. Wasn't that Demon Knight?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's older, and you know, he gets thrown through a window, and he's talking about how his shoulder dislocated and how he wouldn't have dislocated 10 years ago, kind of a thing. Great, great comic book.
Mm-hmm.
My exposure was very limited, so I knew that if I was going to do a comic, I needed to get better at reading comics, and my choice was either read a whole bunch of comics or take what I love about film, which I've watched a ton of film, and I've done a bunch of analysis of film, and I took a bunch of film classes in college, and I was like, okay, maybe I can push that direction. And I love film more than I love comic books. I mean, they're all great, but that's really what was true for me. So it took a really long time to get from, is Mrs. a World, and how am I going to show this to people? So, I mean, there's sketches on my blog that you can see of how I was developing the style and what brushes I was using in Photoshop and how are things going to move, and it takes so much time to figure all that stuff out. And it's just, you know, I'd have a weekend and whatever and not a lot of client work, so I'd sit down and think about it some more, and you'd be driving to work and you're thinking about it, and you're sitting in the shower and you're thinking about it, and you'd get these ideas that would pop in, and solutions to character problems or plot problems or business problems. And it's been really crazy how every aspect of this project has been, you know, revealing itself to me as I just continue to put energy into it and kind of wait for it to come to me a little bit. So that's why it is what it is.
It's a great story, bro. I mean, that's serious. When you know the inspiration, you know, it happens in one big boom, but then you still get, you know, you're still feeling the love for it as you go and you find new things or new, like you said, ways of expressing it. And I think that's really awesome. Can you take us through the sort of actual phases of what it takes to make a single episode? Now, an episode right now, I guess you're shooting between 4 to 5 minutes. So, you know, how many hours for the art, sound, voice, you know, edits, the whole thing? How many hours does an episode take for you to put into it?
Maybe 250 hours.
Wow.
From beginning to end. We did episode 1 and 2 back to back to save on funds so that I could just make them both, because to stop production and then start production again would be a lot. But from writing, I mean, writing alone is probably 20 hours. It's only 4 or 5 pages of script per episode. I mean, it's a very Western-inspired world. And Westerns, people don't talk a lot, which you know, I can rely on my visuals and illustration. So, I mean, but you have to make sure that the dialogue that you do have, which is very minimal, is really tuned in to what those characters are thinking and where they're at. So it takes me a long time to get that polished to the level that I find it acceptable. Storyboarding is the next step. And I'll do several passes there, show it to people, see what they think, and then start polishing that. As I'm polishing the final storyboards that I will then animate, or I'll have my animators animate. So that's two people working at once. I'll have the voice actors come into the studio and record the lines that I've written. And then we can sync up the dialogue to how they decide to pace what I've written. Which is crazy how you imagine you run through a line so many times in your head, you expect it a certain way, and then the voice actor will take it and just completely run with it. And it's 100 million times better than what you had in mind. Just same words, and the character's even better than it was before. And that's Susan Spencer does that all the time with Tine. It's been really great working with her. But, the animators work on it. I polish a little bit of the animation. We send it to the sound guys, and they go through this completely still 5-minute episode. There's no sound, and it's fully animated, ready to go, except for the voices. And they go through, and they add the Foley, the steps, sound effects, wind, gunshots, echoes on people's voices if they're in a canyon or if they're out in the open, or Doppler effect on the helicopter as it goes by, the remotes as they fly by. I mean, we spent hours
right.
tweaking that, and they spent hours dialing that in so that it sounds right. I'd be cruising around on the internet looking up YouTubes of Chinook helicopters flying over people in fields to kind of get that, to show them what I was thinking and how to art direct that a little bit. And I think they did a great job. The boys at Zach Audio up in Wisconsin handled all the audio for us, and they did fantastic work. Then we get a final back. We get the audio cut. I layer it in and post it. And it's all together, 240 hours is the math that I've come up with a couple of times now. I'm hoping that gets a lot quicker as we get better at the process and polish and understand what we're doing more. Hopefully we get better.
So this is, I mean, and the point of asking that question was so that our listeners understand. This isn't a simple afternoon gig where it's a couple guys get together and throw up a black and white comic. This is a love affair. This is something that, you know, this is massive amounts of effort and massive amounts of work. And I just want to make sure listeners understand that when they watch it, they appreciate the sounds. I'm blown away. One of the things I had written down that I wanted to talk to you about was I was blown away by just the simplicity and yet the chilling sounds of the music. The guitar is just and they hold these notes, and it's this, you know, it's this gritty sort of guitar sound. But yet, when you're watching the Isthmus, you know, the show, it's perfect. I'm like, oh my god, it just fits. It's so atmospheric, and it really does. The lightning coming down was exactly on time, and that takes, like you said, it's got to take hours and hours and hours of work. So you can definitely see it's very polished for what it is, and you know, people have to. That's why it's so important as we go into this and we start telling our listeners how they can help out, that they do help out if they can, because the project can't get done. I mean, this is a massive love affair for many people, and it's not something you can do on your own. So that brings us to it. So how can they help, Nate? I know there's a campaign out there that'll help you defer some of these costs. Why don't you give us the website and tell us a little bit about it?
Okay, yeah, you can head to watchisthmus.com, and there's a link there to our Patreon campaign. The Patreon, it's just patreon.com. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com. And then you just do a /Nate_Able, my name, and you're good to go. Or you can go to watchisthmus.com, and there's the link there. So, yeah, we have the campaign running, and the episodes are going to be free. I've released them for free. If I can make all 14 of the first season or more, I'm going to continue to release them for free no matter what. So any help that we get is just going to help me make them better and quicker. And at this point, it's more about paying the people that worked for me, not me paying myself. I work freelance full-time so that I can feed me and my family. And then whenever I get a free moment, I'll work on Isthmus. Because, like you said, I'm just uncovering it. it's going to come to me. I'm the speed at which it decides to show up is how much time I decide to put into it. So, yeah, if you decide to pledge, you get access to the episodes, like I said, and then there's perks. You get drawings and other things. I post content on the Patreon feed that I don't post anywhere else. Stills from upcoming stuff, some storyboards, very unpolished storyboards. So if you're curious about a project like this or how I go about it or want to make one of your own, I'd be more than happy to help you or to let you check out all the work that I'm posting and kind of get an idea for how I go about it. Or, you know, even if you have an opinion about how I can do stuff better or what you would like to see. If we do finish Isthmus, the first season, 14 episodes, I don't know where we're going to go from there. There's a million projects I could work on, and if people are digging it or if people want to see other stuff. And I haven't started posting other work on that blog yet, but there's two or three other projects that I'm really excited about that I could work on in a year or two once we finish Isthmus. But Isthmus is first, and it needs to get done, and I'm really excited to get the first season out.
So if a person goes ahead and pledge, they can pledge anywhere from a dollar or whatever up per episode, and then that money goes, like you said, to help taking care of the voice actors, the sound guys, and getting everything done. What's your timeline, hopefully, for Isthmus? Are you looking to be done within by the end of this year? Or are you thinking it's an 18-month project? How long do you think it's going to take before, you know, let's say the funding comes, you know, very, very easily, which I hope it does for you. Is it something that you think you can complete within a year?
No. I posted on the website that I was going to do one episode every 2 months, and that number is ridiculous.
Okay.
There's no way I've been able to do that. Depending on the ebb and flow of freelance and the ebb and flow of the Patreon campaign, I'd say I'd be happy if we get all of the rest of the season out in 2 years, which is going to be a slow and steady process. As exposure increases and as people get into it, and when you say, hey, I've got a really cool story and there's only one episode out, people are like, okay, cool, but if you have four or five, that gives like people can put their butt in a chair and watch it for a half hour and go, okay, cool, I get it. This is worth, you know, my time. And that's really that's the first thing in my mind is how can I make – you could watch anything on the internet at any point, right? So how can I make Isthmus something that comes into your head when you're like, hey, I want to be entertained. What do I want to go see? And as we get better at that and as more content gets up there and as I post more, I'm really looking forward to continuing to gather a really cool group of hardcore fans that can watch me and watch the project and take part in this project as we move forward and build this thing out and see where Isthmus goes. I mean, the sky's the limit. I can't even begin to tell you about where I would love to take this and which actors I would hire, and who would direct,
right,
and whatnot. But that's a long ways down the road, perhaps. So, and I'm just gonna make it. It's just gonna happen. So, we'll see.
Very cool. All right, I'm gonna turn I'm gonna turn it over to J-Man for a little bit, and I know he has some questions for you, and I'll touch back with you when he gets done. So, Joel, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Nate. So, with the Patreon.com program that you're working on now, it's slated for 14 episodes. 14 episodes take total control of Patreon, and that's really cool. What happens if you hit your goals? I mean, do you have plans for taking your production to the next level? Because you're talking about your timelines, and you know, my thought is, well, what if somebody came up today and said, well, we absolutely love this and we want to take it to the next level? You must have ideas about how you could increase those timelines or move things along at a faster pace. Have you thought about that at all?
Oh, for sure. If we managed to get – I had an amount up there. Right now, I believe it's $1,200, $1,250. If we get that amount, I can do an episode every 2 months reliably. That pays for everybody. Except for me, my time will still be free, but that pays everybody else. So that's one. Well, I'll spend 1 month making ends meet for 2 months for myself, and then I'll spend the second month completely on Isthmus. That would be amazing to be able to do that. And if anything above that will displace time I spend working on freelance so that I can work on Isthmus and continue doing stuff that I really love, beyond that, is the sky's the limit. There's the programs that we're using, After Effects, is such a powerful program. I'd love to include more voice actors, three-dimensional elements. We're dabbling with the use of color. I mean, if I can spend twice the time I spend per frame, which is about an hour, hour and a half per frame, except for some of the big sweeping epic ones that are really, really big, like 10,000 pixels wide, I could spend 2 or 3 hours. The resolution goes up. I mean, I can go in and start really, really taking my time on stuff, and the whole thing is going to look better than I literally sit down with a timer and I'm like, okay, 1 hour, go. What are we going to do here? Because I have 50 panels to finish with 17 layers. And, you know, there's three different character poses as you know, Joxus turns around or something like that. And it's crazy how you can fit 250 hours into it takes a long time to get through those things. But
it's pretty amazing, yeah. Too. And think about, I mean, you're talking about how the extra things that you can do to it. And I think for anybody that has seen it, I was immediately blown away with the feel of the entire thing, even in the black and white. I love the black and white. It had this great feel, but then the idea of just playing with color here and there, and I've seen that done in different things where you sort of use that as sort of accents for things. I can only imagine where you would take it from there, because what you've got so far is pretty incredible.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, like I said, the sky's the limit. It'd be so cool to be able to just pour an entire, you know, month of time into episode 3 and episode 4 and do them back to back and have that cycle not interrupted by a month of freelance or 2 months of freelance or you know, the distractions that keep me from being able to work on that and keep the people that work for me working on it. But, we're at a position now where I can make it slowly and surely, and I'm all right with that too. I get a chance to make something that I love, and that alone is worth it. And if people like it and want to come along for the ride, that's cool too.
Yeah, that's great. So besides the web-based funding that you're thinking of, were you thinking of taking this to any gamer or comic conventions and perhaps showcasing it there as well, looking for, you know, scouts that might be looking for things that they want to fund? Have you thought about taking it to those avenues?
Yeah, like I said earlier, the project I think is a little young yet. If we had more episodes together, I would feel very comfortable showing up at like Comic-Con or CTN. I know Amazon is looking for animations right now, and I look at Isthmus and I say it's not quite to the point where I would feel comfortable pitching this to something. And that also, I would like to have more episodes under my belt before I have something, some external force come in and try to influence the project so that it's more established and it's more definitive. But once we get that 3rd, 4th, 5th episode done, I would feel 100% cool. I can't wait to have a table at, like, you know, Spectrum or Comic-Con and be pitching people one-on-one, like showing it to them. It would just be fantastic to be able to do that. We've got the RV
right here.
I can just drag it over there.
Yeah, I think if you had five episodes that you could take there, you could probably rule the corner of the convention, because I think you're really right in saying that 5 episodes would give you enough breadth that people would come in and go, okay, this guy definitely has a substantial vision and where to take it from there. Tyne, your main character, what can you tell us about her and her journey in the story?
Oh, man. I love talking about Tyne. She's a lot of different things. So talking about any one facet of her feels like I'm not doing the other facets justice. But I think first and foremost, I really wanted to write a strong female lead character for my IP. I recently just had a 1-year-old daughter, and being a man raising a woman in a world still not quite fair in a long shot was really difficult for me and still is. And so I wanted to explore that through a strong female lead character. That's one aspect of Tyne. The characters, Joner and Tyne, were actually flipped for the first 5 or 6 years of production of the really, really early preconception. And I got to a point where I was like, okay, let's shake it up. And I do that sometimes where I'll take major thing that has been the same in the IP and in the story for a really long time, and I'll flip it just to kind of keep myself on my toes. And having that flipped and having a male character and a female character switched was really, really exciting and interesting. And I think the geek world needs more of that. I really think the geek world needs, and we're seeing that, you know, the most recent release of D&D 5.0 was, you can tell that they're really trying to bring everybody to an equal playing field within the nerddom, you know? And I really dig that. So that's a big part, I think, of what I'm bringing to the table with Tine. She's a badass, and she's three-dimensional, and she changes and she evolves. And I can't wait to see her go through what I'm planning and hoping that she gets to go through when we get through the first season. So stay tuned, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. In the first episode, you open the story with a young character who's a mute. I love this character. He has this device that helps him speak. And then, just as quickly as we learn about him and he's got this device, you take it away, which seemed to speak to the starkness and the brutality of the environment. It seemed like great storytelling technique. What else can you tell us about Cloxus and Leroy?
Leroy, the character that you're talking about, I think so often in science fiction and fantasy, you have your viewer into the world, the traveler that is new to this story, to this world. And I wanted to establish very quickly that I don't want to rely on that, even though it's a very useful and very great trope. You know, Luke Skywalker as the new kid on the block, and you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi as kind of like showing him the ropes. That is a great, great trope. And I knew that Isthmus is, like you said, stark and brutal. Taking that away and giving him no voice means I have to work really hard to make sure that this universe gets clear, gets spoken about in visual terms and not in spoken terms. There's a kind of a twist in episode 3 that I'm not going to talk about too much, but we get another window into the universe and into Leroy's mind that I think people are really going to dig when we get around to making it. And Choxus is I said earlier that this is a Western kind of style, Western sci-fi. Totally loved Firefly, and I was like, okay, but no spaceships. Let's do Firefly with no spaceships. And you know, it's more complicated than that. But Choxus represents the Western, the old school Western, the silent, really deadly, really violent character. And so I had to have that in here beside Tine, who I imagine as even more badass by comparison. So to kind of contrast and compare, and there are obviously far more complicated characters than what I can say in a few sentences, but that's pretty much the baseline of those three characters.
That's great. I have to ask, was it an ode to Hitchcock that led you to create a cameo in the project as Joner, or did that idea come from some other agenda that you had?
I actually think, Hitchcock is great. When he gets on the bus with the giant instrument in, I think it was Birds. Oh, man, it's the funniest moment in that whole movie. It's the only funny moment in that movie, and if you're not looking, you miss it. But I think... I think Joner and representing me and using my voice is kind of almost a promise to the viewer that Isthmus comes first. I'm not going to get in the way of what Isthmus needs to be. You look at a lot of directors and you see them do a really great, you know, trilogy or a really great single movie, and then you can tell that either they weren't in love with the project anymore or their vision was different than the fans' vision. And the project suffers for that. And I think me, you know, killing off Joner in the first scene was a promise to the viewer that I am going to do everything I can to avoid that. On a less epic note, I got to save money not hiring another voice actor. And if we ever need to bring Joner back as a zombie, we're covered. I can
nice.
Voice act him. So.
Nice. Well,
nice.
I know.
Yeah,
I'm,
that is good.
I'm a huge fan of this project. I know that Raz is. And I'm sure Mr. Sunshine is. I love the spaghetti Western sort of feel of it and the jagged motion effect. in addition to the organic storyline. It really has this great path that it flows, and all of these things sort of merging together. I hadn't even thought of Firefly because it just seemed more, it seemed original to me, sort of, but in a different way. It sort of called to me a little bit of the, to play off something that Craig had mentioned earlier, reminds me of the cartoons of Planet of the Apes that they came with in the late 70s when I was a kid, where everything seemed to be happening in the desert for some reason. Everything always seemed to happen in the desert. And they were going over and over these same scenes of tanks running through the desert. And I always remembered like how lonely that seemed to feel. And this definitely captures that. I hope everyone out there takes a long, hard look at Isthmus and helps you get the story told. How about giving the websites and your point of contact for people to get to this project, just in case anybody missed it the first time? Because I really think this is something that, you know, a lot of people could get behind and really like.
Well, I really appreciate that. The website is watchisthmus.com, or you can head over to patreon.com and type in Nate Abel, and that's N-A-T-E. _ABELL, and that'll pop right up. I mean, I think you can probably type in Isthmus. That's a pretty unique word that we're using for the title, so you're not going to get a whole lot of other stuff. You just go to the first YouTube and check that out. I hope that's true. I haven't checked that, but yeah, that'll probably work out.
All right. Well, that's all I have. I'll send it back to you, Raz.
Okay. Listen, from start to finish, I think everybody here just appreciates your vision. Nate, and I apologize for saying your name wrong in the beginning of the interview. It's Abel, which is good to know. No, listen, I got to make sure like I said, when the limo comes, I want to make sure the driver knows who I'm getting picked up for.
Oh,
so
yeah,
important.
Yeah, that's right. Front row seats.
Yeah, otherwise I may end up working the party. Who knows? but listen, we're excited for this. We really want to see something come out of it for you. And we hope that what we can do is maybe in about 8-9 months, maybe even a year from now, around this time when, you know, you've got maybe 5-6 more in the can, we can get you back on and talk about where we are now and what we see and how, you know, the goals that you've hit. Yeah, that'd be awesome. We'd love to have you back on again. It was really interesting. And by then we can, you know, you're not telling us anything about Lero now, but we'll be able to have our own interpretations of some of the stuff coming up. So that'll be pretty cool.
I look forward to
thanks
the
for coming on,
thank
Nate.
Thank you so much for having me on. Definitely. Thank you so much, Wolf Sten. You guys
not
have
a problem.
An excellent evening.
And, oh, you too, and good luck with the one-year-old little girl. I know raising little girls is a lot of fun. I'm sure you're going to have a blast with that. So take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you real soon.
All right, thank you so much. Bye.
Good night. All right, Mr. Sunshine. That was, well, for everybody that just has been with us, that was Nate Abel talking about Isthmus. And again, we've just banged this over and over, but seriously, people, if you have a chance to do anything and support this on Patreon, give it a look. Mr. Sunshine, you had a chance to kind of look it up too, is that correct?
Yes, I have.
And what did you think overall? I know you weren't part of that interview yet, because we had some other stuff going on, but what did you think about it? Did you feel that same sort of dark, you know, that dark, haunting landscape and the vision of it? What were your feelings?
Oh, absolutely. I see the spaghetti Western aspect of it. You can almost hear the, you know, the Clint Eastwood in the background.
Right.
You know, you can see the tumbleweeds going by. You can see that little stub of cigar sticking out of the side of his mouth. Yeah, you get that feel for it. And it's I think it's excellent. I have to reiterate, like you guys have both said, check it out. And the other thing is, they're 4 to 5 minutes apiece. It's not going to take you forever, people. So, you know, 15 minutes out of your day, and you've watched the first two episodes. So, there you go.
There you go. So, it was great having Nate on. I'm sure hopefully we'll be able to check back in with him again. He was a really good guest. And very interesting. I thought he was I'll tell you, I don't know. You know, we all talk about being geeks and being off, you know, on the grid and off the grid, and how, you know, we have a passion to do other things. You know, J-Man, you with your art, and me trying to write again and go back into the process. And here's a guy who actually said, you know what, I'm not living within the confines of that set structure. I'm going to go where the jobs are, move where I got to move, and taking his family with him. So that's pretty amazing. I wish the family the best of luck with that, and hope one day he can actually park the RV in a driveway if that's what he wishes, and go about it from a studio where he can actually make these things and show his work off properly, because he's really, really good. Okay, so one of the things we also want to talk about tonight was swatting. A big article came up on a bunch of different sites on the internet over the last couple of weeks about Joshua Peters. He was an American Air Force veteran who plays video games on Twitch, and he has about 50 to 60,000 people watching him play like RuneScape and other games. I believe he's in RuneScape right now. But there's a point in one of his more recent videos where he literally has to take off his headset and say, "Hold on a minute, everybody." Pause what he's doing, and the next thing he knows, SWAT teams are literally blowing through his house. Right now, he's currently living with his parents, and the SWAT teams came in, drug his mother out, into the living room, his father on the floor, cuffed his 10-year-old little brother, and all of this was done as a gag. All this was done because somebody called in because, for whatever reason, they had a beef with Joshua, and they thought it would be funny while he was on camera to call in an event and have the police have to respond in like and kind. So the show gets interrupted. Joshua is held down, and about 45 minutes later, he comes back and has to apologize to his viewers and say to everybody what's happened to him. And he goes on and says that, how serious the situation is and how scary it is. I mean, his 10-year-old little brother, literally with the, guns pointing over his head as they're questioning him as to, was he or was he not involved with this event? Obviously, he wasn't. But this is becoming more and more commonplace. People are finding out other people's personal information, and they are taking advantage of it in this internet age. Obviously, both my co-hosts are going to agree this is crazy. But I think we just want to just mention it to everybody. If you have a beef with somebody, write a letter. Send an email. Don't watch the show. But to set someone up for something like that, if you were responsible and that little boy panicked, or let's say, someone in the house has a disability and doesn't react properly to the police and gets hurt, or God forbid a police officer makes a mistake because he was told that, someone was a pedophile in the house and they think they're going in saving children, and in actuality they're putting them in harm's way, how do you sleep with yourself at night? I don't know. J-Man, did you have a chance to did you see any of this stuff come up over the internet?
Yeah, I was looking into it, and I mean, it comes up. It's been on CNN. There was the interview to a political commentator named Eric Erickson, who discussed an incident that he'd been involved in with swatting, where someone called 911, giving his address, and basically said that he had just shot his own wife, and that she was dead, and he was going to go kill other people and stuff like that. And that actually prompted, I believe it happened in Florida, because it prompted Sandy Adams, who is with the congressional district in Florida, to push for a Justice Department investigation. So, I mean, I don't know where that would go or how they could combat that, but I do think that it plays to the whole anonymity of the Internet. But there's so many different ways to make calls now that you're not necessarily calling from a phone. I mean, I call into our show through Skype, and you guys call in through a different way.
Right.
And I don't know if there's an easy way to stop this, but it's insane. It's truly insane, and it's people that don't feel that they are accountable for their actions in any way, and they're not, they're having a hard time making them accountable, unfortunately.
It takes people like Josh, who feel they're providing a service. I mean, we're a much smaller, we're a smaller venue than 60,000, obviously, so we don't have that, we don't have that kind of mustard yet. But, and again, that's partly video to podcasting. I think video bloggers tend to do, especially if they start getting followers, it's a little bit of a different world as far as numbers. But it takes them and puts them at such risk, and all they're trying to do is just have a good time and share their hobby with people that are interested in following along. And all it just takes one person who's a little unhinged or a little bit upset, and the next thing your world's coming apart. I couldn't imagine having my daughters, thrown to the ground or their bedrooms searched and, for any type of, who knows, what's going on, and we know what they reported in, and it's a frightening thing, and you're right, I don't know how to stop it. What do you, Mr. Sunshine? Did you see any other examples, or did you hear anything else about this thing in Florida?
Not the one in Florida, no. But I actually have. I went to the FBI's website, and in September of 2013 actually have something here about the crime of swatting. They're saying one of the things they said is that some of the people have actually had mild heart attacks so far. That's what they're really concerned about. That there's going to be some little boy is going to be in the house playing army, you know, with another little brother or something. The SWAT team is going to come in and kill them because they think they have guns in their hands and they're just playing with toys.
Right.
And then, health issues like this one, that's what it says. Some people have already, they've been caught off guard when the SWAT team suddenly arrive on their doorsteps and have suffered mild heart attacks.
God.
It's nuts. And, being someone who's had a couple of them already, that is not something you're looking forward to. You know, 12 guys with automatic weapons and SWAT gear coming crashing through your doors and windows, not going to be fun.
I can tell you that if I ever figured out SWAT was coming through my house, I would look like Emilio Gonzalez. Do you remember that shot of him in the closet in Florida as the SWAT team grabbed him?
Elion.
Yeah. That would be the look of my face. I'd be screaming.
In 2009, there's this guy named Matthew Wegman. It says in 2009, Matthew Wegman, then 19 years old, was sentenced to more than 11 years in federal prison for a swatting conspiracy. 11 years in prison. It says he was a prolific phone hacker, and him and his 9 co-conspirators used social engineering and other scams to obtain personal information, impersonate and harass telecommunications employees, and manipulate phone systems to carry out dozens of swatting incidents. Now, this is the part to me, the next part of the little article is the scary part to me. His first swatting incident occurred in 2004 when he was 14 years old. When a girl he met through an online chat room – wait, it gets worse. You'll make a worse sound than that. When a girl he met through an online chat room refused to have phone sex with him, he retaliated by swatting the girl and her father. He convinced the 911 operator he was holding the two at gunpoint in their Colorado home, and SWAT responded to the house. 14 years old. I'm sorry.
Well, what's got to happen though is, as soon as the sentence he got is just, and the more people that they hammer into the ground like that, the more it will stomp that out. Because when people see they're not messing around, you're going to go to prison for a nice long time, and then you're going to be the guy that's in the corner crying in the shower. As soon as they see that, it'll cut it back. So I mean, I'm very happy to hear that he got that sentence.
Well, then here's another one.
If it was dozens of episodes and he only got 11 years, he'd even get a year an episode.
Right.
According to Mr. Sunshine Red, it was dozens of episodes. Dozens?
Yes.
Well, I'm sure it all came down to what they could prove or use for the court case.
Yeah, I guess. I also think the other thing could be that there's no precedent set. So, or there wasn't at the time. So how much is too much time? How much is not enough time? So they just, they come up with some number. Now, here's a much more recent one. This is 2 weeks ago. A 19-year-old, apparently everybody who does this is 19 years old. A 19-year-old Las Vegas teen This guy's name is Brandon Wilson, and he goes by the online handle Famed God. Real nice. He did it in Illinois, in Naperville, Illinois. He called in a murder to their 911 call, to their 911 line. And when they figured out who he was, they went and they confiscated his computer. On his computers, there's evidence that he's done similar incidents across the country. And that came the same day. He got arrested the same day as Joshua Peters got swatted online.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well,
and that's what this one says, the same thing. It apparently it's become a national phenomenon in the online gaming world. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's a dangerous game, you know, and it's something that really shouldn't be happening at all.
I don't understand what do you get from that? What satisfaction can you possibly get from that? Does it make you feel better that they were scared? I don't see the payoff.
Well, it's bullying. It's clearly just bullying. You don't get a certain result that you want, so you're basically going to lash out at the person. It's the ultimate in bullying, because you don't have to face them down, you know, because, you know, as we all know, bullies are basically wimps that are hiding behind their insecurities. So it's the ultimate act of wimpy bullying. Nobody can catch you, and you're just sort of hiding behind. And on a lighter note of this is kind of an intervention, Craig, and Brew and I wanted to talk to you about this, and we'd like you to stop doing it. So please stop making the calls.
Wow.
I'm tired of getting donuts delivered to my door, Craig.
Wow.
No. I'm sure Craig's tired of having you watch him sleep.
That's exactly true.
That's exactly right. The secrets that you keep while I'm watching you sleep.
That's right.
Nothing like a little scary part.
All right. So
the scary part is that's the romantics.
Oh, I don't think it's romantic, but if you think it's romantic, perhaps that's another conversation.
Oh, no, that's the name of the group. And
sure,
you would find
sure.
it romantic watching me sleep.
Nice. All right. So in case you hadn't known, swatting, yes, that's what it is. Listen, don't do it. It's just that simple. I'm sure most of our listeners all of our listeners actually are probably, heady enough to realize that this is just going to get somebody in a ton of trouble one day. They're going to figure out how to catch them. When they do, they're just going to slam everybody. So, you know, if you're angry at someone, like I said, send an email. Don't listen to the show. Write, you know, don't talk bad about it, you know, Yelp it if it's a restaurant, but don't swat people. It's absolutely going to get somebody, it's going to end up getting somebody killed. Okay. So one of the things we also want to talk about and send a congratulations out to, TempleCon was a week and a half ago now. I think it was, just about 2 weeks ago. And, Chris Weinstein, a friend of the den, went up there. And Chris came back with some decent swag. As a matter of fact, he won a tournament called Who's the Boss, which we want to congratulate him for doing. It's a privateer press tournament in which you have a side, so he chose Crix, but you have no caster. The caster is generated randomly or is picked by your opponent. I'm not sure exactly which one it is, but Chris ended up having a mercenary captain at one point and then a different caster from a different faction. But what you have to do is you have to hold your own and then be able to carry the day even with casters you're unfamiliar with. So congratulations to him. He won that. That was really very cool. And I'm sure that, you know, it was a well-deserved victory for Chris. He's really good at the especially from my understanding is with Cricks. He knows them sort of like the back of his hand. Chris taught me Malifaux a little bit, which is very cool, and I'd like to get back into that when we have a little bit more time. Hopefully in the next couple months I want to try to get back down and get with some of the New Jersey Jackalopes and hang out and play Malifaux. So congratulations to Chris. Okay, some of the things that, speaking of Chris and Privateer Press, some of the things we've been getting slapped on the fanny for by some of the people that will listen to the show is that we haven't really done enough stuff with minis lately. We sort of, for the last, oh God, couple of months, have kind of walked away from the miniature, you know, the miniature scene a little bit. Been doing a lot more of the board gaming, RPGing stuff again. So we'll at least give you some of the rumors that are out there right now. Coming up, Warhammer has the rumor mill claims that there's going to be plastic miniatures for the Horus Heresy. They'll be coming out sometime soon, and there also, it appears, everyone is out there blogging and going crazy that the Sisters of Battle will finally get a proper codex and will be put into plastic. They finally are removing most of the metal from the shelf. They're not going to remove the faction like they originally thought was going to happen. It does appear that the Sisters will be back, whether it'll be in a support role only or as a full faction, that is still up in the air. Some bloggers are saying they'll only be support faction to Imperial Army or some other faction of the Astartes. Others are saying that they're actually going to be their own faction again to work in this new edition, sort of be able to be a standalone army again. I can honestly say that I have gotten rid of a lot of my 40K stuff. I only kept my Black Templars and my Sisters. And if the Sisters of Battle actually do come back and have a presence in the game, I have a feeling I will end up getting divorced because I may end up buying miniatures again. So that would be a bad thing for me. As far as Privateer Press just announced a bunch of new releases. You have the Extreme Juggernaut is for Kador. There's an all-in-one army pack also for Kador, which is very cool. It has, let's see, Sorsha in it. It has a Spriggan, a Demolisher, Wardog, some Widowmakers, Winter Guard, Infantry and Rocketeers, a Standard Bearer and an Officer, Yosef Grigorovich and Lady Ayana and Master Holt. Fiona the Black is out. She's also coming out right now and will be out from Privateer Press soon. Captain Sam McHorn and the Devil Dogs. They'll be boxed for about $60, but they look like a Merc group. Braylon Wonderheart is also coming out. Let's see, who else is here? Thragosh, the Prophet of Evil, yada, yada, yada. So Privateer Press is going to be releasing a bunch of new things, probably all mentioned or talked about at TempleCon, because, again, that's one of their places that they do a lot of early announcements for what's coming out for the remainder of the year. So we look forward to that. If you're still into the Privateer Press War Machine and Hordes, you're probably going to get some really good-looking minis coming out. These guys, they just get better and better with their miniature sculpts. They look really, really awesome. Okay. A couple weeks ago, we posed a question, and the question was, I believe, what was the greatest sci-fi movie of all time? And you couldn't just name a series. We asked you to name the episode of any particular sci-fi movie or series that you're interested in. J-Man, what did you actually come up with? Because you posted an answer for this one, so why don't you give it to us and tell us why. What was your greatest, or what did you think is the greatest sci-fi movie ever made?
You know, I thought about this, and that is really hard to say because I'm a huge sci-fi fan, but I also tend to be a sci-fi purist. I mean, I loved the first Star Trek movie, which most people hated. For me, Alien was, I had to pick Alien over everything else, only because Alien encompassed, I think, the perfect combination of that pure sci-fi feel, the exploration of a new world, the alien setting, the way the creature came about. You did have the antagonist. I just thought it was a phenomenal film, and it's never gotten old for me to go back to, whereas the other Alien films were great, but they became more action films than sci-fi films as they went along. And, of course, obviously, like many series, they kind of degraded as they went along. But there's a lot of movies that I loved. I love 2001, but their 2001 Space Odyssey, for me, kind of dragged a bit, too. So that's kind of – I went with Alien. The thing is, it's all going to be a personal choice, but I just love that movie.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Sunshine, your choice?
Okay, well, I'm torn, as the J-Man is, as I'm sure you are. There are just so many out there. To pick what would be the best is a little difficult. I lean towards Blade Runner the most. I think it was so new. It was so different. It encompasses so much of the science fiction aspect of everything. So that one to me is right up there. And then I was mentioning earlier the original Planet of the Apes, 1968.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing. That's like I'm drawing a blank on the words here. It broke new ground. It was so different than anything else that had ever been there, and the makeup effects were so amazing. Matter of fact, I think it won an Oscar for that. Is it Shakespeare? No, but I just found that one to be an amazing story and an amazing movie. And then you know they made four after, so obviously it was kind of profitable as well. So
right.
there are so many other different choices out there. It's very hard to pick what I would consider the best. I think a lot of times it depends on what your mood is, because there are some science fiction movies that are much more humorous. There are some that are dark. There are some that are scary. So I think it depends on your mood as to what one plays to where you are right at that point in time.
Okay. I agree. I'll give mine last. Some of the ones that came up on the survey and were given to me, handed to me on paper from other people that had read the survey but don't always use Facebook, but knew about the question because they listened to the show or vice versa. Empire Strikes Back was, I believe, the Lord of the Boards choice. The Matrix was one of the movies that somebody gave to me. Ed Ronan, I believe, picked 2001 Space Odyssey. A friend of ours, Howard, picked Terminator 2, which I thought was an interesting choice. Terminator 2. I also received a vote for Stargate, two votes for Firefly, and then I'm going to go with the hardest part for me was I tried to do this in a very systematic way. I tried to say, okay, what movie do I go back to the most? Which movie do I go back to the most? And the one that I go back to the most probably isn't my favorite. And then I said, okay, well, which one influenced gaming that I did or was in my head for a long, long time? And I'm going to throw this one out there because I know when I saw it, I was with a person that's actually on this show. So it was you, J-Man. And both of us watched this. It just dissolved into the annals of time, and yet I own it and I watch it a lot, and it just comes back to me as a great science fiction movie because it's so very plausible the way it went down, and that's Outland. Now I know Craig hates Outland, but
no, it's a good
Jamie
movie.
And I actually ended
up space.
Well, yeah, but. It was. I just found it's older Sean Connery. The acting's not great. The special effects aren't anything over the top. Matter of fact, they're using ballista type weapons, using shotguns, not even lasers. That never bothered me. It was the fact that we were mining on Saturn, that we were digging for ore, and that the company was just ripping these people apart with this drug, and the sheriff had to make his stand. So yeah, I Outland said a lot to me. I was going to choose Dune, but it really wasn't a movie. It was a made-for-TV movie, so I kind of didn't count it, the second version, because David Lynch's Dune is just way out there. But in the end, I'm gonna kind of bow out a little bit and scream Outland and just run for the hills and hide, because I'm sure there are so many other ones that probably people can make a ton of case that there's better movies than that. But for me, it stuck in my head, and I said, which one do I go back to? I always go back to Outland. So that was my choice. Okay, so we've got some pretty good answers. I can understand Terminator 2. I can understand Matrix, especially Blade Runner. Great movie. All these were really good answers. So we appreciate everybody coming on. Remember, we're on Facebook at Live Inside the Wolf's Den. The next question is for the ladies as well as the men. Sometimes the girls don't always get involved in these questions, but I think this one they may. And it's more because, let's just say when you hear the question, you'll understand. We're not trying to make it that the ladies only answer, you know, questions that have a sexual connotation, but here it goes. If you could choose to have a one-night, a passionate one-night stand with a vampire, werewolf, alien, android, or drow slash elf, which would it be? So we're going to post that on the Facebook page. We'll find out what kind of crazy one-night stand you would like to have, and what would it be with, a vampire, a werewolf, an alien, and please don't explain why the alien. You don't have to give us any tentacle stuff. We get it. An android, or a drow, or an elf. All right? So that'll be the next question, and you can post your answers to
it. I think J-Man's a little mad because dwarf isn't on the list.
It says passionate one-night stand, not 3 minutes in hell, is the question.
Yeah,
so,
I'm sorry. Was that a shot off the bow? Did anybody else hear that?
No, that was a shot directly.
I think that was a midship.
Yeah, that was a midship. Had nothing to do with the bow. I just don't see most, you know, the list of great dwarven lovers, probably, yeah, not very long.
I will very honestly say that while I love playing dwarves in D&D based games, I do not have a carnal passion for them. I will save my personal choice for Facebook, where you can all peruse it in all of its glory, where I will no doubt expound beyond the limits of what is considered good taste.
There you go. So before we get on to the to take this into a D&D bend, and before we go into the review from the game that we've been running, giving you guys out there and girls some idea of how we run our games and do some of the things we do with 5th edition, we want to send a shout-out to the people over at Dark Horse Press, especially Mr. Mike Mignola, for Hellboy turns 21 today. Yay. First Hellboy comic was released 21 years ago today. So congratulations, Mr. Mignola. I am looking at a piece of your artwork in my studio. Actually, I have one from Mr. Talbot, who drew him for a while. I was on board with Mr. Mignola, and I have a piece of Mignola himself. So thank you very much for all the great years of Hellboy, and hope for many, many more. He's one, probably in my top three characters of all time. And we just want to say that shout out to you. So, okay, so J-Man, you're in the campaign. There's a couple people in it, 4 or 5. It's pretty much a small group, very, very, you know, everybody knows each other for a long time. Kind of knew what we were going into it, that everyone was sort of playing into their roles, except you were doing something very different with a cleric. We left off where everybody had passed away, gone into purgatory, been sorted, brought up to this massive castle, and brought into the army of the undead in service of this one general named Lady Jarda. So why don't you pick it up from there and tell us what's been going on?
We met last Friday again, and I don't think we had met in the intervening time that for the show that I missed. We basically had a situation where someone had sacrificed themselves, kind of like one of these suicide bomber deals, and a giant had blown himself up and taken out a keep. And this was basically part of a much larger scenario that involved another faction, a faction of orcs, and led us to make some complicated decisions. We ultimately, since we were playing with a younger player that we were trying to bring along and bring her into the world of D&D and get her as hooked on it as we have always been, we sort of took turns throwing out some ideas that she could run with, both the Lord of the Board and myself, and then ultimately we tried to get her to make those decisions of what would be the best tactical way to go about it, so that she could feel that she was sort of building into it. And I think that worked out well. We ended up taking a journey, which led us to meeting Nagash, who that was quite interesting, and there were some interesting conversations there, and I was very happy to see that our young player had sort of taken the lead again in communications, and it was funny to hear her RPing in the game, because it reminded me so much of when I was first young and I first started gaming, and I started imagining, like, is that what I sounded like? Are those the things that I would have said? And I realized at that time, like, you know, I'm thinking now in the mind of a gamer who's 47 years old, so obviously my mind wasn't in the same place as when I played when I was 13, 14, 15 and that. But I think she did phenomenally well. You know, the game continues to progress to different levels now. And we, you know, through the gifting of a set of phenomenal cards that I got from Raz, we are now using the D&D cards for Magic users that help you along with the spells and remembering the spells and laying them out. It really adds a different component that I had never imagined. And again, as Raz had said, I'm new to playing Magic users. It's not something that was my forte. It is something I'm finding very interesting and challenging, because in a way it makes him an underdog in a way that a fighter is not. I mean, a fighter is a very immediate character, you know, where your answers are pretty straightforward. I will kill that with my axe. I will kill that with my sword. Whereas this, you sort of have to plot more and plan more and think things out. So the cards were really great for me as a visual where I could lay them out and I go, well, here's my first level spells. Here's my cantrips. Here's my second level, my third level. And I'm starting to slowly get into a rhythm with how those things work. And, of course, for some people, you know, using magic in games is super easy because it's something they had always done or something that their personality lends them to do. But for me, this was an intentional move to play something that was completely the opposite of what I was comfortable playing. I've actually found it to be far more rewarding than probably the last couple adventures that we had played before we stopped. Only because it had become so routine for me. And, you know, even the environment is just a completely foreign to me. You know, we're basically playing in Purgatory, and now we're heading to the Plains of Hell, to the Ten Plains of Hell, which I find extremely interesting because I'm finishing up a book, Inferno, which deals with Dante's Inferno. So that should be really interesting to play one off the other. But that's pretty much where we're at with the game. It's really been interesting. I would really be it would be really cool if we could get some commentary from some of our listeners on the Facebook page, maybe as an addendum to talk about their experiences with the latest 5th edition of D&D and what their feelings were, and were they able to bring new people to the game or even just first-time players and where they've taken the game. I don't know what Raz thinks about it. I'm sure he probably feels along the same line.
Yeah.
What do you think, Raz?
No, that's a great idea. We'll definitely put a post up there asking people for, you know, stories about 5th edition. You know, Nate Abel even said that in 5th edition, you're finding that it's so much more inclusive by race, class, and you know, the structure of how they built the game is that they want everybody involved. You know, it used to be that thieves were very, very, were only used in very small matters. Now thieves are up front fighting, doing tons of damage, but yet they're very, very squishy. So, you know, you're seeing a far more a D&D that isn't your original, you know, advanced Dungeons and Dragons or 3.0, 3.5. This one feels very different. Feels far more visual, far more cinematic, and it's a little different to run it. Difficulty checks change how you do things, but no, it would be a great idea, and so we'll definitely put a post up there and have people talk to us about what they found about 5th edition, whether or not only do they like it, but how has it made their gaming better or worse? Or are they just basically still throwing their hands up in the air and going to Pathfinder? So, you know, there are people out there that have now found that system and are dedicated to it. For me, I'm going to stick with the D&D just because, you know, it's what I grew up on. Okay, we originally had planned, moving into the next set, we wanted to talk to you about some of the big blockbusters that are starting to come out. You had a couple of movies come out over the last two or three weeks. Seventh Son, which none of us have seen, The Kingsman, which Lord of the Board did see and was going to talk to us about tonight because he really, I think, enjoyed it. And then there was, but unfortunately he can't be here. He ended up having a situation occur. So we'll look forward to hearing about that next time. But I had a chance to take my 14-year-old daughter to see Jupiter Ascending with Mila Kunitz and Channing Tatum. I'm going to be as nice as possible because somebody's son or daughter made this film. It is a Wachowski Brothers film, which right there, I normally appreciate the vision of the Wachowski Brothers. I liked the Matrix series. I wasn't the hugest fan or the biggest fan in the world, but I enjoyed it. Loved V for Vendetta. Loved it. Thought Watchmen was good. They've made their movies and they're usually visually stunning. This was. Don't get me wrong. If you're looking for big shots of spaceships, you know, excellent design set designs and things like that, you are going to get a Wachowski Brothers film. After that, you are going to get Twilight in Space. This movie is, my 14-year-old daughter looked me right in the face and said, that story was stupid, but my God, Chatham Tanning had no shirt on, and he had gravity boots that turned him into an inline skater that could go across the sky, so he was an inline skater boy with no shirt on, saving the girl because he's part wolf, yada, 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 and all of a sudden she was like, I have to own this movie. So, openly admitted, you know, just like for the guys when they watch Sucker Punch, oh, Sucker Punch, yeah, I love the story in Sucker Punch. No, you didn't. You love the fact that a bunch of girls dressed in various style clothing were whooping the shit out of people with swords and guns. That was great, and I enjoyed Sucker Punch for what it was. But I have to give this one to the girls. This is a girl film. I'm sure there are some guys that liked it. That's not a problem. But for me, I was pulling my hair out. The family behind me couldn't stop laughing as I slammed my head several times into the theater chair in front of me, begging for some acting to occur. It was just a tough film for me. Look online, the views from the critics are very mixed. Even Rotten Tomatoes, I think, has it down under 30%. It was visually, again, stunning, but it is not Guardians of the Galaxy. This is not The Fifth Element. This movie will come and go, and I don't even think most people are even going to care. So if you have a younger person in your life, especially a young female, by all means, if you want to devote 2 hours and 10 minutes of your time and $25 of your money, she'll thank you for it. Other than that, I would say it's Jupiter descending very quickly. So thumbs down for me. But again, that's why we talk about it, because it's subjective and to each his own. One of the other things we wanted to do tonight in tonight's show, before we say goodbye, is we're going to be giving you tips for going to conventions, especially if you're traveling. As we learn things and as we come up with ideas that might help you get to your destination not only safely but cheaply, more affordable, we're going to pass that information on to you. We started pricing transportation this week because we have a bunch of people going together, and we quickly and immediately found out something that I'm not sure if all of our listeners know about. If you're trying to rent a car, the zone you live in makes a massive difference in the price of the car you're trying to rent. So let me give you an example. The Lord of the Board, we went to the same company, both of us online at the exact same time. He went to his zip code, I went to mine. We were looking at one up from that, premium size cars or minivans. The quote he received online as he hit the button for his zone for the same dates, picking up the car on the same day, returning it on the same day, was $410 more than the quote for me for the exact same minivan or a premium car. The premium car actually I think was like $340 difference, but the minivan was over $400 difference. Yeah. All because he lives within 15 miles of New York City, and I live within 15 miles of nowhere. So it was same company, same insurance package. We both opted for the exact same things, and we tested it on several different models. People, if you can somehow, or if you know someone who lives out further away from cities and then the boondocks, when we called, we confirmed it. It's about the theft of the vehicle, the number of cars on the road in the area, the distance to a city, where they think you're going to be taking the vehicle when you rent it. It all plays into it. It literally was more than double the price. And I had unlimited mileage, and he did not. Mine was offered at unlimited. His was offered at I think, $150 a day. So, you know, by all means, shop around. Look, if you have somebody out in what you would think would be a safer or lower insurance district, by all means, let them rent the car because it'll save you a ton of money in the long run. Just a tip.
May I ask
that will,
a question,
one of the
sir?
Tips that we're going to pass on. Sure.
Was there any sort of a charge for bringing it out of state into different states? I know some of the companies don't want you to bring it out of state. And if you do, you have to tell them exactly where you plan to bring it. And there's like a charge, almost like you're a trucker, going from state to state.
Right. Let me explain. So with mine, it was unlimited mileage within both New Jersey or Pennsylvania and New York City. New York State. I had unlimited mileage in this state and the bordering of New York or Pennsylvania. If I were to leave at any time the Pennsylvania area, I was allowed 200 miles a day. The kicker is, we're going to Indianapolis, right? Indianapolis, most of the trip is through New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is like 370 miles of your trip, of the 580 miles. So while you're only doing about 180 miles outside of Pennsylvania, they count the whole thing because you're leaving the state. So you have to call them and talk to them and basically negotiate it and say, listen, because I did. I called and said, here's the situation. If I drove this car for a week in Pennsylvania, back and forth to Pittsburgh every day, moving my college daughter into her dorm, I could rack up 6,000 miles and you guys wouldn't say boo to me. But because I'm going out of the district by 160 miles, you want to charge me every day at 200 miles a day. So my unlimited mileage package is gone. The guy said, let me talk to somebody, got back to me, we'll waive that. So I'm actually going to be able to get the unlimited. But I had to call. I mean, you have to read what you're getting. But yeah, Craig, that's a good point. They actually did have keep it within the state type of rules and guidelines. But if you call the different companies, some of them will work with you and some of them don't. It depends on what you get. But the pricing is very different by zone.
Very good to know.
Yeah, huge, huge, people, really. And again, obviously you have to be 25 to rent. That's just a New Jersey thing. I'm not sure if that's everywhere across the country, but I know it's in New Jersey. I think it's 25 is minimum to rent a car.
So if you don't mind, what's the total cost and for how many days?
A week. And I negotiated the unlimited. They had to make a special note in the file. A week on a minivan for $389.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
No, that's
because
that's
I'm gonna have. Yeah, I got five people plus girl. You know, three of them are girls with luggage, so I'm SOL there. So I'm gonna be the extra seat I have in the 6-passenger minivan is gonna be basically folded out and moved out for luggage. But yeah, it was $389 booked for the week. That's with tax.
How much to rent the soccer ball to go on the back?
Oh.
I'm just busted. Oh. I'm just busted.
Mr. Wilson?
No.
How much for the mom team?
Yes. How much for the mom team? See, Mr. Sunshine picked up on that right away. Me not having kids.
I know
kids,
Mr. Sunshine
like...
did. Yeah, Mr. Mom jeans, that's cute. Well, on that note, I wish you all a very well-known to health.
here's the real question, though. Is a minivan going to be enough with the three females going with you? Because
you mean enough room?
I can see a lot of luggage. I can see a lot of luggage having to come out.
Oh, I know. I mean, the premium, it would have been a crunch. I didn't ask for one. I guess I could find one. But yes, but the pleated front jean, the jean with the pleat in the front, yes, we'll have those. We'll have plenty of those. Thank you.
There you go. There you go.
You vicious, vicious bastards. You vicious, vicious bastards. Before
I'm
we say goodnight.
Cool but fair.
What's that?
I said I'm going to go with cruel but fair.
Oh, there you go. Before we say goodnight, Mr. Sunshine, is there anything else on your agenda that we needed to talk about tonight?
I have no agenda.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He's agendaless.
Boom. Boom. Genderless. Okay, and you, J-Man, anything that you needed to add before we say goodbye to our listeners?
No, I would just say, you know, check out my other podcasts I got out there, Barfly Confessional, if you're into the bar lifestyle and great conversations with interesting people. And we're on Facebook at Barfly Confessional and on the web at barflyconfessional.com. Hopefully I'll have next time up, we'll have some more information. Right now I'm in the hinterlands of Dragon Age Inquisition, so hopefully we'll get out of the hinterlands and next to the next area of the game by the next time.
Very cool. Any idea who's coming on the Barfly Confessional next?
Yeah, coming up next, I had a delay of a week, so we're running a little bit behind. I had some scheduling difficulties, but we're going to have a conversation with the folks at Four Paws Playground. They're a couple of former IT geeks who completely walked away from IT and first started off training emergency dogs and rescue dogs, and then eventually opened up a really amazing sort of like a wonderland for dogs that does both crateless boarding and also does daycare, like on steroids. So it'll be a great conversation with them, and I'll have that up. Hopefully that'll be available Monday.
Oh, great. Okay, that sounds interesting. So check it out at barflyconfessional.com on your favorite app, your favorite podcast app for the Android or the iPhone on the iOS. So we'll send out a shout to the Lord of the Board. Hope he can be with us next time. Hope everything works out for him. I'm sure he doesn't like being stuck at work any more than he has to, but unfortunately things happen. But for myself, Mr. Sunshine, and the J-Man, I want to say thank you again to our very special guest, Nate Abel. Please don't forget to check him out at nateabel.com or at watchisthmus.com. They are on YouTube, but we found out that in order to get it to come up properly, you do have to use his first name. The word isthmus itself gets all kinds of stuff about people in the Isthmus of Panama. So if you're going to use the word isthmus, spell it properly and use Nate's name, Nate Abel, A-B-E-L-L, and then you should get it to come up with no problem, and you can watch episode 1 and 2. So until next time, stay gaming, enjoy yourselves, have a good time, and we'll see you in 2 weeks here on the Wolf's Den. Good night, everybody.
Listen, we gotta go. I can hear them coming. They're knocking at the door. But remember, tell everybody to listen. Tell everybody to believe. Because hobby is how we survive.